Light it.
I always look for the light to go on.
We're on. Welcome, everyone, to the February 15th meeting of the Business Transportation Economic Development Committee. We're going to start off first with introduction of legislative concepts into bills for the benefit of those who don't always show up here. It is a courtesy to introduce legislative concepts as committee bills for anyone or any constituent who wants those. So we have a list of those that does not commit any of the committee members that they will either support or not support a bill. It just merely gets it into the process. All right, so to start off with then, we have six Legislative Council drafts, and I'll read them off. For introduction is LC 3663, LC 3601, LC 3851, LC 3620, LC 3673, and LC 3528, and the chair will move introduction of these legislative drafts. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? There is none. Six legislative drafts are introduced. All right, so the rest of the day we're going to continue on the second day of our trying to orient the committee to what the community feels are the economic development barriers and opportunities, and what we're trying to do for the committee is to sort of get ourselves on an agenda to do the best that we can in this limited legislative session to position Oregon well for economic growth as the economy recovers. So I've asked, we started last week with the governor and the department, and today we're going to have start off with the Oregon Business Council and then a number of regional partners in getting their perspectives, then the counties, the State Chamber of Commerce, and the Public Ports Authority. So first off then is going to be the Oregon Business Council and Mr. Weiss. Thank you. Since the governor's already committed that we're going to implement the business plan, we thought we better make sure we understood what it was.
Well, then I guess I don't need to say anything. If I might, I'd like to ask Jeremy from my staff to join.
Absolutely.
And he has been tracking a lot of the work that is going to be in your committee. Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Atkinson, members of the committee, my name is Duncan Wise. I'm the president of the Oregon Business Council. I really want to thank you for inviting me to be before you today. Jeremy Rogers is the project director for the Oregon Business Plan, and so I asked him to be with you as well. What I'd like to do is I'm going to give you an overview of the business plan today. I know you've got a lot of other folks who we heard from during the year, so I'm going to be brief and hopefully an introduction. What we hope is that you'll allow us to come back as you look at individual bills and particular issues that we've identified in the business plan, and that's particularly why I'm glad Jeremy's here, and please call on him anytime. So what I'd like to do is just quick overview what the business plan is, what the agenda is this year, and specifically we're going to talk about the issues that we see before your committee. As the chair asked us to do. The business plan is now 8 years old. It's an economic strategy that includes a specific set of actions that we believe can help Oregon reach the goal that we've laid out in the plan, 25,000 jobs per year for the next 10 years, and raising our per capita income above the national average by 2020. We've laid out this goal and the actions to get there at the leadership summit last December. Many of you were there. Appreciate your participation, and really, again, thank you for this continued dialogue. We do see this as a partnership between business and our elected leaders, and again, we're really pleased to have this opportunity today. The business plan itself has a steering committee of business leaders from all over Oregon. They include the chairs of the four major business associations as well as others. We've listed the membership on the material we presented out to you, you have in front of you. This last year, we did travel the state. We had 20 meetings. Many of the folks you're going to hear from later we worked with to learn what the regional issues were. We learned a lot as we took a new look at the Oregon economy. We also relied very heavily on the Oregon Cluster Network. That's a group that we formed with Business Oregon several years ago. It's the major traded sector associations, and we listened hard to them, you know, the natural resource industries, the high-tech manufacturing, a whole variety of industries that we listened to learn what their interests and needs are as we think about the future of the economy. What you asked me to do today was to identify some of the barriers to economic growth and what we need to do to be prosperous in the years ahead. As you know, for anyone who have watched this and listened to this year, we see we've divided our work this year into two big categories. The most fundamental economic barrier to Oregon's long-term growth is the fundamental issue that's facing this legislature, the state's fiscal health. If you haven't seen our presentation, The Circle of Scarcity, it's actually, we've got a four-minute version on our website here, which I'm not going to share with you, but please, we hope you'll have a chance to visit it if I can pull it up. There it is. But again, encourage you to go visit OregonBusinessPlan.org. We have a really nice summary of the fiscal challenge facing the state. The basic problem is, as we've been describing it, is, you know, the state's per capita income has declined in relation to the nation as a whole. As we look at the public sector revenues, it's very much tied to per capita income, and so as our per capita income has declined, so has the revenue available to the public sector. And then as we look at how the dollars have been spent over the last decade, we see how healthcare and corrections taking more and more of a share of the resources and at the expense of education, in particular higher education. Couple this with a tax policy that's heavily weighted with the income tax and capital gains tax, and a very unstable one at that, as Senator Burdick is very clear about it from her vantage point. That's a really terrible recipe for long-term economic health. The economy relies on a strong, healthy public sector, good quality education, good quality public services. We believe the public sector, in turn, relies on a healthy economy, and the way we've set up our systems right now, we believe, are unsustainable. And so that is why we are so excited about the governor's budget presentation, the focus on redesigning the major public services. We're very excited about the work going on in the Revenue Committee to take a look at building up a rainy day fund and looking at the revenue stability. We think these are the fundamental issues in front of the state for long-term economic health, and I think the business community has come together strongly on that proposition. So that's the big one. And again, all of you deal with that in your different committee roles and responsibilities. That's the fundamental issue facing the state. We've also taken a look more specifically at barriers that you might associate with economic development, particularly the kinds of things that you are be looking at in this committee. Some of the barriers we heard as we went around the state this year. First of all, and it's perhaps the most fundamental one as we look to the future, is our attitude. We're focusing on jobs today, and I know a number of you in this room have been focused on jobs through the long haul, over, you know, good times and bad. But we point out in this, and as we've talked with folks, there is this inconsistency in attitude. When times are good in Oregon, we tend to forget about economic development, and it's at those times when the big investments get made that'll serve us well in the bad times. We need to have a new set of value proposition around economic development that suggests both in good times and bad times, economic growth, raising incomes is important. What happens in good times is we think of business and economic development as a kind of an afterthought. If anything, we view cutting off economic development as a growth management strategy. We've got to get out of that mindset. Economic development is critical for the entire economic cycle. We've got to focus on education in the long haul. We heard loudly that message. Other messages we heard, land availability was a big one. We heard that in all corners of the state. We heard about new tools that could help us in economic development. We heard about natural resource policy, forest land, particularly federal forest, water policy came up as we traveled the state. Out of all our work this year, we pulled together the plan, and what we see now is this tremendous opportunity to work together across with the business and political leaders. We're really pleased that the governor is sharply focused on jobs and economic development. We see the great cooperation going on in the legislature and this committee. So what specifically can we do on the jobs front? In the business plan this year, we were asked and created a top 10 list of specific ideas beyond the fiscal policy issues that we thought could make a difference in helping promote job growth and meeting our goals of growing jobs and incomes. I want to stress that there are no magic bullets to economic development. You can't you know, turn the economy around with any specific action. But we felt like these 10 items together collectively could be a great down payment on getting the economy moving, a good jump start. And if you can get these done this session, we think we can make a difference in building the economic climate. So what are the items? And I'm just going to touch on them briefly, and you can come back to any of them at any time during the session. We'll certainly develop them. Number one is the Oregon Innovation Plan. Innovation economy is critical for Oregon's economic growth. Innovation happens across the sectors. We think that the Oregon Innovation Plan has been a big success over the years. It's been implemented, already creating, we estimate, 600 jobs. The Business Oregon has done a terrific job in vetting proposals. You've got the innovation agenda, a $19 million investment for you in a whole range of areas, in food processing, wave energy, the nanotechnology, the EV cluster, a number of areas where there are targeted investments which we think can propel the economy. So we encourage you to support that. It's in the governor's budget. The second area is about the Business Oregon Toolbox. Business Oregon has been a terrific partner with the business plan. I want to stress that. Their organization has supported our work in clusters and innovation in a whole range of areas. The governor's budget gives them the resources to move forward. I know budgets are tight, but these are investments that grow jobs, grow revenues, and help the Oregon economy grow, which again provides revenues for public services. A couple areas that we'd ask you to think about. One is the Senate Bill 219. It's a program targeted at low capital, high income job creation. We don't have a very good toolkit in that area. We've got some tools for high capital, but we don't have the tools we need for attraction in the high income, low investment. So Senate Bill 219, and there are variations on that. I know Ron Fox here has got a proposal he'll probably pitch to you. There are variations on it, but the basic idea is that we don't have a toolkit to attract new companies who are growing with high wage, low capital. The other is the Enterprise Zone. You'll be looking at that. Again, very important program that we heard about around the state. And on the Business Energy Tax Credit, looking at manufacturing and moving that into Business Oregon is something I think makes sense and something to take a look at. Third area, land availability. We heard about this 8 years ago. There was some great work on building the Oregon Prospector. Tim McCabe was instrumental in this. But I think if you talk to him, he'll tell you that this is now, we've kind of run dry on industrial land, and we've got to take a fresh look at this. The number of bills coming your way to looking at streamlining the process. Jeremy has been helping this. Tom Gallagher has been the lead for the business plan. Certainly we can, and AFL-CIO has been involved in this. We've got a team working on this, and again, this is an area we hope you can get a focus on. We need to accelerate the facilitation of industrial land, and I hope that's an area where this committee can really spend some time. Infrastructure projects. Infrastructure does double duty, creates jobs immediately, and the infrastructure, assuming it's wisely invested, and I think there's some wise investments available, also propel the economy. So we have long supported Connect Oregon. There's a Connect Oregon 4 package in front of you. The Columbia River Crossing is obviously a high priority for moving freight, and again, also creates jobs. In the area of energy infrastructure, we heard a lot about frustration on siting new projects, whether they're transmission lines, distribution lines, or even renewable energy projects. HB 2700 is one that I encourage you to look at as a vehicle to accelerate permitting of energy infrastructure. We need a lot. As again, as Chair Beyer knows from his Public Utility Commission days, we have a huge needs of infrastructure and energy. Again, just like transportation, creates new jobs right away and is critical infrastructure for the productivity of the economy. Very important. Regulatory reform, we heard a lot about just the slowness and difficulty of permitting, making decisions quickly. Don't have a bill, this is probably more of a process issue. We encourage Governor Kulongoski took a look at this and made some real progress, but this has not gone away. We need to make more timely decisions on regulatory processes, and again, this is an area that we encourage, particularly by executive action, that
Duncan,
we look at.
Duncan, as you were touring the state, did you hear specific permits or permitting activities related to that?
A lot of it tied back to the two areas I've already mentioned, quite frankly. It was a more general issue, but both in land use and in facility siting were the two areas I think Jeremy, is that fair, we heard the most about. But also just uncertainty in timing of all permitting was an issue, and you want to speak to this a bit?
Yeah, and I think frustration that Jeremy, will you say your name?
I apologize. Jeremy Rogers, Oregon Business Council.
Thank you.
Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Atkinson, the one thing we heard a lot about was, you know, an interest in kind of regardless of what permit we're dealing with, a, you know, emphasis on, you know, predictability and timeliness, and that, you know, we don't allow one agency that, you know, to slow the whole process down, which seems to happen quite a bit, and that, you know, some way of kind of expediting, streamlining, and, you know, potentially from the governor's office, just making it clear that, that, you know, we have to move at a certain time frame, and not really letting the kind of slowest agency dictate the time frame, would be, you know, a really, you know, good improvement. And as Duncan mentioned, we heard a lot about it related to land use and energy facilities, particularly in transmission issues. But generally speaking, we heard about the need to really try to kind of speed things up and try to get the governor involved in doing that.
Senator Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Duncan or Jeremy, are either of you familiar with or know who, if anybody, is on point on this issue specifically, like in a work group setting, or has a specific bill this legislative session? And I ask that because I've asked some other folks, you know, as chair of the Natural Resources Subcommittee of Ways and Means, I've expressed to all the natural resource agencies, which are very much involved in these processes, that I'm interested in taking up this issue. I've been speaking with members of the informal Natural Resources Caucus in the Senate. Everybody there is interested. The governor's office has come before this committee and said they're interested. But to my knowledge, I don't know of a specific meeting or a specific project that is underway to really get the ball rolling. And
let me give you a few names, Senator Edwards. So Tom Gallagher would be great to connect with. Greg Miller from Weyerhaeuser.
Mm-hmm.
And the community, regional community, that emphasizes this the most as we traveled around and seem to, and they have some things they've written up and some ideas, is are the folks in Coos Bay. And if you reached out to Sandy Messerly, who's the head of the Economic Development Agency down there, she, I think, would be very helpful as well.
So we've got the two areas, land use and permit and energy siting are the two areas we've most focused on. But I'm hearing you and thrilled your interest. I will say this is a complicated, it's multi-agency, it's a complicated process issue, which it does require a concerted effort across agencies, and I'm thrilled you're interested in it. So we'll.
They're two pretty different issues.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand.
The land use goes forever, but yeah. It's from my experience, it'd be interesting to hear Mr. Roberts and Mr. Fox address this and the siting of industry. If you don't have the site designated right, forget it. It isn't going to happen.
That's right.
That's a different issue. The energy siting is much, much, much more complicated.
Yeah. No, and again, when you weave across, as Senator Edwards is talking, the natural resources and just permitting systems and speed, that's, again, I wish I had a magic bullet on this one, but I hear you're, I'm glad you're interested, and we'll keep pursuing that one. We heard it a lot. And there are lots of, you know, lots of grumbling out there. We need to get more specific, as you're saying. So there are other areas we had, and those are the first five, and then I'll just keep going and briefly on the rest. These are, may or may not be in your committee. We're not quite sure all the boundaries. But forest health, biomass energy is a big one. It's a huge opportunity. We've been promoting that in the business plan. Particularly the east side forest health issue is very ripe with the federal agencies. But again, I would say in general, we're not getting all the productivity we can out of the forest resources, and especially the federal forests, and there's an opportunity for more wood supply for 2x4s and value-added products, more energy for biomass, as well as greater ecological health. So it's a complete win for the state and a big priority. Accelerating energy efficiency, we support the governor's efforts on schools. We think there's but I think there's a broader opportunity here, as again, Chair Beyer knows from his utilities days. Energy efficiency is the number one source of new energy, and it can be developed pretty quickly, and we need to figure out how to accelerate it across the board. that's a big opportunity. Job training, we've identified some specific areas there. The career readiness certificate, the engineering investment councils are both critical near-term opportunities that we've endorsed as part of the larger education redesign effort. When we listen to Eastern Oregon, Columbia Water withdrawal, there's a regulatory action by the Water Resources Board that we think would help both fish and create more water storage in the summer. We think when there's excess flow, you have a real opportunity to draw more water for Eastern Oregon, which would create jobs, create agriculture products, and really help the economy out there. Finally, tax changes. Again, looking at Senator Burdick here and her committee, I don't know how much their overlap here is, but again, we've identified some targeted opportunities in tax restructuring. We understand there's also the whole larger issue of the kicker, it's part of that, but we try to identify here, without doing a major tax overhaul, some specific ideas that we thought were important to grow the economy, capital gains, reconnecting the federal code, the R&D tax credits, the Betsy, and adjustments to the gross sales factor. So those are we'll be bringing those, and the business community, I would say, is working like never before to have a coordinated set of responses on that issue. But we really think there's some opportunities there. So 10 ideas. Jeremy's going to be here this session working with our business partners. We're working very well across the organizations as a resource for you, and we'll try to be tracking bills, and we'll, again, keep track of all this work on the website and again, acknowledge all the great work that you do as a session as we try to rebuild the Oregon economy. So that's a quick overview, Mr. Chair, and again, I really want to thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Duncan. I got out of this two specific bills, SB 219, HB 2700.
Mm-hmm. SB 260.
Which one?
260 is the... that was the Connect Oregon, right, Jeremy? Is that...
I believe there's a bill that looks like it could be a vehicle for Connect Oregon. The Connect Oregon package is 260 coming to this committee, but I'm not positive that I haven't done all my homework on that.
CRC will probably be here in some way, and the innovation plan, and then some of the Betsy and the E-Zones. The Betsy probably both here and Senator Burdick's other committee, Finance Committee.
Mm-hmm.
That's more of an end-of-session discussion.
Senator Bayer, I do believe that there's one, that the R&D tax credit is coming through this committee.
Ah.
And I also believe there's a bill that would move the Betsy into Business Oregon, but I'm not positive if that's coming through this committee.
Okay. Well, we're starting to get a few things in the legislative agenda here.
This is good.
Questions for the panel?
Yes.
Yes, Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. I appreciate you putting all this together. I'm very interested in 10. I've been very attuned to capital gains changes for some time. But I'm shocked, frankly, that there's no addressing here of the need for capital other than what the government's supposed to do. In my non-senator life, in my real life, I work quite a bit in financing, fixing companies, and growing companies. Mm-hmm. And with the exception of a few standout boutique VC firms and finance firms in Portland, we have no capital in our state. We don't attract capital. And so what that does, if you're a business that needs to get funded, and you're going to go to the Silicon Valley, or you're going to go to L.A., or you're going to go to Seattle to find money, you've got to be 10 times better
right.
than anything local down there, because, you know, you're that person from Oregon that has no money.
Right.
And so I see all this. There's a lot of great words in here about reforming, and I think Senator Edwards has it best, you know, put some skin on what does reform regulatory process mean.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. But if you don't have private capital, you don't have economy.
Mm-hmm.
So how come that's not in your 10? Or is that just, am I just out to lunch?
Senator Atkinson, in the plan you have here, it is mentioned, and the reason why we didn't put it here in this testimony simply because we don't have I don't think we have a lot of suggestions about actions the state can take to improve that situation, other than I do think that the tax environment is a huge one. We have in the business plan did include some recommendations around modifications to the Oregon Growth Account and the Oregon Investment Fund, but that comes back to your point about stuff that the government can do in terms of what we can do to move private capital at a state level. I think there probably are good ideas out there, but
I'd just be curious. I mean, you know, I'm so pro Oregon, but our culture, our business culture in Oregon doesn't. We think about all kinds of great things government can do, and all kinds of great things committees can do, and all kinds of 10-point plans or 5-point plans, and you know, catchy things. But we don't talk about money. You have to have money to bring and grow business. And if when I work in other parts of the country, they're very aggressive about money. I mean, it's not to be shamed about. If money's good, it drives business. There's investment. And, you know, Seattle is very aggressive about private capital. Los Angeles is all about private capital. LA or San Francisco is all about private capital. And then we come to Oregon and we're
right.
Not about private capital.
So, Vice Chair Atkinson, we did hear a lot about this year. And again, in the full plan on page 9, you'll see that we did, again, as Jeremy mentioned, we focused on the Oregon Growth Account, the areas. The other thing we've been looking at is trying to channel some of the other foundation philanthropy into venture funds. We also heard, frankly, about small business, just generally loans. More than we've ever heard before, get the access to capital, not just for new businesses and venture-type businesses, but just in general across the board. This came up very loudly and clearly. As Jeremy mentioned, it's not entirely clear the legislative fix on this, but again, when we heard this early on, we pulled Treasurer Wheeler into the conversation. He's been really looking hard in both the Oregon Growth Account and trying to look at how to more carefully target those funds. So that is an area we can do something about. But you're right. I do tie it back to the capital issue, back to the tax structure. The high capital gains does not make this a terribly attractive place for venture capital to be located, frankly. And that's just the reality.
Thank you.
It's a difficult subject, though. I know I was in a meeting. I've been in a couple of meetings with a number of bankers, and particularly most recently with Treasurer Wheeler on this thing, and the banking community say, we've got all kinds of money.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a problem with having money to loan. We just don't have any businesses to loan it to.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is a little different than when you sit down with businesses that have been around for a while.
So yeah.
They just cut my capital line.
Yeah. We've heard both sides throughout this year. But I think there is widespread agreement for a long time is Senator Atkinson's point on the venture front. I think as early stage venture capital, and it's really important to have it located in our place, near our industry clusters, that they're learning what our opportunities are, and that is a big, big issue for Oregon as we try to build an innovation economy.
I'll just add to that. You're right. But when I know of several Oregon companies that are in startup phase, couldn't get funded, moved out of state to get funded. Once they were out of state, they never came back.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's why that's why the capital needs to be here. I totally agree with you on this and figuring out strategies to deal with it.
Well, like my son says, you've got a check in the checkbook, so write a check.
There you go.
Okay.
All right.
Other questions? Anybody else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next we're going to get, there were three, but now two of the regional development, Ron Fox and Jack Roberts. You guys want to come up? I want to say Trey Sen from Klamath Falls. Klamath was going to make it, but he got snowed in on the other side of the mountain.
I was going to mention to Senator Atkins, the rivers are flowing again in southern Oregon.
I know. I have an update on my phone. I check it in the morning, check it at noon, and we're full of water right now.
That's right. Go ahead. Senators, my name is Ron Fox. I'm Executive Director of SoReady, Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development, and my boundaries are very close to Senator Atkins' boundaries covering Jackson and Josephine counties. I'm also here today, with a kind of a second hat on. I'm co-chair of the Oregon Economic Development Association's Government Affairs Committee, so I'm going to be sharing with you some thoughts I have for Southern Oregon, but also some specific bills that our trade association has identified that are important to economic development. You should be getting two documents. First one I'll talk on first, it just says Oregon's Economic Opportunities and Challenges, and I'll try to cover this quickly so we can get to some of the specifics. I tried to anticipate what Duncan would say, and I got a few things there, and a few things I'm going to duplicate a little bit. First thing on my list, I've been at this a while in Oregon, and I think it's time we finally deal with that legacy that Governor McCall left us maybe 30, 40 years ago about Oregon's a great place, come visit, but don't stay. It's built. The reputation we have, I think, does influence how businesses consider Oregon. I don't think it's the taxes specifically that challenges, though I think the capital gains question is important relative to equity investments. It is the processes. And the analogy I would give you is, I can get a visa, which is really a license by the United States to travel the world. I can do that by going online, filling out all the information, providing it. If I want it in like 120 days, that costs me $65. If I want it in something less than that, I pay $165. I click the button, and I'm good to go. If I'm a business in Jackson or Josephine County and I want to build a commercial building on a zoned piece of property inside an urban growth boundary that's approved for that kind of development, I'm lucky if I can get all that done in 180 days and meet all those requirements. Now, that to me defines the challenge we have, and I think Duncan was right. This is not an easy challenge. It involves some changes that have to be made in the local community planning and permits process, but some of the limitations, some of the constraints of changing exist with agency statutes here. And at the bottom of my list is a suggestion. I think this is an effort that the legislature could direct to the governor's office in his multi-agency effort to work with economic development groups, because we're the ones who deal with the new coming businesses and with the statewide business associations who tend to focus on those companies that are here for some period of time.
Ron, when you talk about the local processes, are you talking about building plan review? Is that what you're talking
about? I'm talking about the process of permits, building, planning processes beyond the point where a parcel of property, Senator, has been designated for a specific use. I don't focus on the residential, so all my focus is on commercial and industrial designations. And it's a very long process.
Trying to separate and understand how much of it is your local land use approval process versus building permits.
I can't give you, it's not 50%, 40%, I don't know that number. Mm-hmm. But what I'm talking with the builder and development community and talking with the folks in the planning and permits department, it's a combination. Some of it is built into the individual city or county processes, and some of it is dictated by regulations that come from agencies here in Salem. But we recently were successful in landing a company from the southeast part of the United States. They came very, very close to giving up on Oregon simply because of the inability to give them a predictable date for approval of their site plan for utilizing an abandoned industrial site for an industrial use. And so our reputation of sort of being exceedingly difficult to maneuver came very close to losing a company that I think they started out with 25 employees, and they've gradually grown over time and are expected to grow significantly beyond that. So it is a part of, I think, the reputation that we have for being a challenging place to do. The other thing I would say to you is our region, like a lot of Oregon, is an economy in transition. When I grew up in that region many years ago, pretty much everything was about wood products and pears by the box. Today we have a lot more technology in our industry makeup and a lot more value-added food products. Duncan made reference to the incentive package that we have in Oregon. You know, maybe almost 30 years ago, Oregon invented the strategic investment plan, which was instrumental in securing Intel and the multi-billion dollar investment that Intel has had. States of Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and probably a few others basically adopted that strategy and now compete for that similar type of investments. Oregon is behind the curve when it comes to the kind of incentives that encourage human capital-based businesses. A lot of the growth in our sector are not companies that are making large capital investments, but they're making significant investments in the brain power that drives their business, and none of our incentives are really effective at creating an advantage for that, and there are legislation, I'll make reference to that. Workforce. This is an area in which I think the state, well, first of all, the state of Oregon really does not have any investments or programs that address the transition of workforce from our past economy requirements to a new economy requirements. The federal government provides most of that workforce training dollars, and it comes with lots of strings and constraints attached from Washington, D.C. And then the last item in my barriers is small businesses. In our region, we have a lot of our small businesses depend upon regional banks. Most of our regional banks either are or have been on some of the federal watch lists for their ratios. They will say they're making loans, but I can tell you that the businesses that we're talking with are not able to get the kind of capital they need, even down to the simple things of having a working capital fund. Soray operates a small revolving loan program. We were able to put together a loan that was essentially used as working capital that kept a company from losing a contract to sell classic trolleys to the nation of Dubai. Small $150,000 loan, but that made it possible for them to fulfill that contract, and they're already talking about expansions of that. Banks in our region, most of our small businesses depend upon their regional banks, and there's a challenge and problem there. I don't know what your legislatively can do about that. Some of it's federal, but it's an issue that's constraining our businesses. There's a lot of opportunities in our region. We have a lot of growth in technology. I've commented about that. I think we need the state support in reaching out to segments of our economy that are actually growing. We have an interesting group of industries in Oregon. It's called the Heavy Lift Helicopter Group. There are seven companies. Those seven companies control about 90% of all the non-military commercial heavy lift capacity. Erickson Air Crane, located in Senator Atkins' region, is probably the largest or one of the largest of that category. It's a growth category, and we're working with them in partnership with Business Oregon, but we need to continue that. It could become a much larger part of our economy in Southern Oregon. And then Business Oregon has done a good job of helping pull the regional efforts together on business outreach and recruitment. We need that model to expand and build to work on business retention and other opportunities that will bring the jobs back for Oregonians.
Are we doing as much as we could or should in that area?
Well, one of my suggestions, quite honestly, Senator, is that while the governor's recommended budget is a significant betterment over the funding to Business Oregon than what they've had previously, I still think it's insignificant to accomplish what we really need to get done here in Oregon. If you follow the example that Duncan Weiss provided on our per capita income, the challenge we face in Oregon, and it's an even bigger challenge in our region in Southern Oregon. We need to do everything we can to encourage companies to make investments, start companies, create jobs. So, no, I don't think the state of Oregon is doing all that it can. I realize the budget constraints, but I think this is one of the strongest arguments you can make for an investment strategy for growing the economy, particularly. Specifically, the legislature in prior sessions set some sunset dates for certain tax incentive programs. One of those sunset dates is set on the entire Oregon Enterprise Zone program. The sunset date for that is June 30th of 2013. Medford and Grants Pass and Jackson County all have successfully utilized the Enterprise Zone endeavors. These are local initiatives. They're supported by the local jurisdictions. They're the sponsors of these. They're short-term property tax exemption programs. We have strong support among those jurisdictions. to continue that, and we're looking for you to extend that sunset out to a reasonable period of time so that businesses can make plans. And I think the House Bill 3017 is specifically targeted to address that. I've already talked about increasing the funding to the Business Oregon. I would encourage you to look at a number of bills that are currently before the legislature. That specifically Senate Bill 443 and House Bill 2411, these are proposals that would address what I think is probably the raging gap in our incentive program, and it focuses on this human capital investment that I spoke of earlier, and that's an incentive based around the payroll of job creation. As you well know, the state of Oregon has a very simple formula for raising revenue. It's called a personal income tax. It raises about 90-95% of all the revenue that is raised locally. We should be putting our incentives on creating quality jobs and a payroll-based incentive. This is the direction that most of our competitive states have chosen to take over the last decade or so, and Oregon's one of those fall behind. It absolutely makes sense. Higher skilled jobs, higher wages. It's both advantageous to our local economy, but it's also advantageous to the state and your ability to match revenues with expenses. The last thing I mentioned earlier was this issue of planning and permits. While a certain amount of public process is important, I think we've created a situation where planning and constructing and building a project, commercial or industrial, in Oregon has taken on a timeline and an uncertainty that has created a great deal of negative environment and difficult for businesses. Again, as I said, if you can get a visa within 60 days by paying an incentive, why can't you get a permit for a commercially zoned or industrially zoned parcel within a reasonable period of time? And I don't think 180 days falls in the category of reasonable in that context. Second piece of document, and I think it covered some of this, is the legislative agenda that the Economic Development Association, we've kind of talked about the Strategic Reserve, which is the governor's flexible funds that can be absolutely essential in helping secure existing company jobs and sending new jobs. The department's bill, which is 44, Senate Bill 446, which I think it really deals with the competitive environment that Oregon faces. Companies have hundreds of communities in 49 other states that are creating incentives to encourage investment and job creation. This particular business expansion program is a good model for you to consider. I talked about the payroll-based incentives. Those are listed there. The business energy tax credit, our association is strong support for the manufacturing Betsy. We think it's a very wise investment. It creates a long-term benefit for the state of Oregon. And then I've already spoken about the House Bill 3017, which is the to extend the sunset provision for the enterprise zone. So I'll be happy to answer any questions. There'll be time for my
questions. Any questions for Mr. Fox?
Thank you for coming all the way out.
Yeah, and one thing I forgot to mention to Senator Atkins, Southern Oregon, will be holding our first ever angel investment conference on the 9th of March. All private money, $150,000 or more award to be made to an aspiring entrepreneur. So we're taking those actions. The thing that I think the legislature could encourage more of, the Oregon Growth Account is matching those regional efforts with $25,000. So they're following the investments made by the private sector. I think that's a wonderful idea. And if the state could find funds capable of enhancing that, I think we can generate more private dollars matched with public dollars and make the kind of capital needed to grow. A lot of great companies. We had 31 companies apply for this award, so obviously one will probably walk away with the prize, but there's probably lots of other, of the 31, there's a lot of other good business ideas in there that are seeking capital to make that first step. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Mr. Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jack Roberts. I'm the Executive Director of the Lane Metro Partnership, nonprofit economic development agency for Eugene, Springfield, and Lane County. First of all, I concur with what Mr. Fox was mentioning is the legislative agenda for OEDA. We're members of OEDA. We support that, and we think that's good. Just a couple things I'd like to talk about, sort of add to that. One, getting back to what Senator Atkinson said earlier about venture capital, it's a huge problem. And we actually had a collaborative effort between the Eugene Chamber and the Corvallis Chamber with an angel conference. We had the first one down in Eugene, the next one's going to be in Corvallis. We're doing that. But in the world of venture capital, it's peanuts. It is extremely difficult. Unfortunately, we're not the only ones. What you have are a few areas that have a lot of money, and the rest of the country struggles. In fact, before I came here, I was at a lunch today for one of the candidates for U of O's Vice President of Research to replace Rich Linton, and she's from Lincoln, Nebraska, and was talking about that problem that they have there and the difficulty. I wish we had an easy answer for it, but I agree that it's something that should be a top priority. We need to think about how we can generate and attract some of that capital. The other two things that I would tell you that we struggle with a lot, and one's been mentioned, but I want to talk about it a little more specifically, and that's buildable land, specifically industrial land. And part of what I think happens is it gets caught up in a lot of the debates about land use planning generally, and the reality is the land use system that we adopted in the 1970s served us very well in the 1990s. We had zoned, ready-to-go land that a lot of other states did not have, where you didn't have to have discretionary land use decisions. We could make that available. It helped us get Intel. It helped us get a lot of the other high-tech companies during that time. And if you look at Duncan's famous chart of showing the decline of our income compared to the rest of the country, the early 90s, when we actually held our own and started to regain some position, was during that boom because of it. There are a lot of factors that affected that, but one of the things that happened was we had a land use system that established a requirement for buildable land for 20 years, and it's 30 years later, and we haven't replenished that land. And it's very difficult politically to try to deal with that, and there are no real easy answers. But I do think that there is a flaw in the way we look at industrial land, is we treat it like just another variety of land, like commercial and residential. But the nexus between population and the need for that land is not nearly as close for industrial as it is for commercial and residential. In addition to that, industrial land doesn't simply serve the immediate jurisdiction. It really, in many cases, are regional or even statewide economic lands. And so I think it is time for us to revisit that, and I think initially some of the bills that have been put forward may help us expedite and move forward. But my great concern is that if we see an economic recovery in the next 2 years, which I'm hoping we will see, where a lot of companies are making their longer-term strategic decisions about where they're going to grow and expand, we have to be prepared to meet that. So I do think this may be an opportunity for us to think outside the box and to start to view some of these larger, 50 to 100 acre or larger industrial sites as state economic assets and not simply as a part of the local land use process. And I would even maybe be so bold as to utter the term supersiting for large industrial sites of statewide significance. I think it's going to be critical. And I know that's not going to be without controversy. I know there's going to be some buzz with it. But if we look at how we're going to face the future, and as bleak as sometimes our economic fortunes appear, imagine if we hadn't gotten Intel. And we don't know what the next one's going to be. We don't know where it's going to be. But this is critical. And I think that as a state, we have to take the lead and do that. So I think this should be something that's forefront in this. There are other things short of that that I think are important. The idea of a designating industrial land that may even stay outside the UGB until it's ready to be developed so that it can't be converted to commercial or residential uses, which I think a couple sessions ago, DLCD proposed and immediately ran into a buzzsaw of opposition ranging all the way from the home builders to the Farm Bureau and Thousand Friends and other people. None of these things are easy. But I think that the time is now to address that. So I hope you'll do that. Meanwhile, I know in our community, both Eugene and Springfield are looking at trying to find some additional industrial land. We're not, no one's ignoring this, but I'm afraid that we're going to end up processing ourselves to death and miss the economic opportunities that we desperately need. The other thing that I think is important is making sure that we see our workforce training resources as a part of our economic development strategy. And I think that there has, to too great an extent, been a disconnect between our use of particularly federal training dollars and our recruitment and retention strategies for business. And often we run into that during our recruitments, and we've talked to our local and to the state workforce folks and been told that federal law prevents us from offering certain incentives or guaranteeing them and making that available. And then when we tell that to the prospective business, they tell us that other states, which have the same federal dollars, are making blanket guarantees to them. And I'm not sure what the legal issues are. I'm not sure who's telling who what and what's happening. I do think that it's time for us to look at what's happening in other states, see how these dollars are being used. But in particular, we need to step back and figure out how do we best accomplish our objectives with the training dollars. And those objectives seem to me to be training our Oregon workers for Oregon jobs. And I am concerned that when we are simply training people with generic skills in the hopes that they will find jobs, in many cases, once they have those skills, either they can't find the jobs and the skills dissipate and the money was wasted, or they discover that it's easier for the skilled worker to move to the job than it is for the job to wait for the jobs to move to the workers. And we're basically training other people's workforce. I think that it only makes sense for us to try to combine those workforce dollars with the jobs we're trying to create and the future we're trying to create. If the idea is to train and educate people for the jobs of our future, then we need to have that connection, which in my mind means that there needs to be a much closer nexus between Business Oregon and the workforce training. We have chosen basically to treat workforce training as a part of education. Certainly it is a part of that. But I'm honestly concerned that in doing that we have lost that nexus with the job creation that not only doesn't serve our purposes from an economic development standpoint, but doesn't serve the best interests of those workers. And if I were going to be blunt about it, I would say that we need to make sure that our use of those training dollars puts the interests of the workers first and not the interests of the workforce training industrial complex. The final thing I would say about the Economic Development Department is that I was pleased. I've heard it's now official that Tim McCabe is going to stay there. I've known Tim since he was in the private sector doing economic development. He has a broad range background experience. I'm glad that he's going to be there. I'm excited he's going to be there. But I think the key in this state to be successful is to understand that the number one economic development official for the state is the governor. And the governor needs to work hand-in-hand with his Economic Development Department. Governor Kulongoski got this idea that he needed to create a new economic revitalization team. He actually took the Community Solutions team, which Governor Kitzhaber had put together, one of his most successful programs, turned it into something called an economic revitalization team, and for several years there we were trying to figure out who was doing what. It sounds like it's going back to the Community Solutions model. I think that's a good model and it does serve a purpose, but the governor and the Economic Development Department need to be the leaders, and that's why I do support, in terms of the money that's available for economic development, you ought to put as much of it as you can into the Strategic Reserve Fund. I know there's some bills talking about designating some others for other purposes, and they all sound good and they're fine, and if somehow that was extra money that you put into that, I wouldn't have any problem with it. But to the extent that we have only a certain amount of money, I think the maximum amount of that should be placed in the discretionary hands of the governor, and that the governor needs to be able to use that strategically. And in this arena, more than any other, it's important to have the state speaking as much as possible with a single voice. And I think that's the governor working with the Economic Development Department, and Business Oregon. Or whatever they call themselves next week. It seems like that would be different name. But basically, that's where the action is. And I think it's extremely important as we look ahead that we be prepared, because I do think we're going to see a lot more. And there's been a lot of time and effort spent, and I don't want to suggest that it's wasted, but we've done a lot of planning, we've done a lot of dreaming, but I think that the next 2 years, we need to do some deal-making, and we need to be prepared to do that. We need to keep businesses here, we need to help them grow here, and we need to recruit and attract new ones here, because I think this is going to shape, the next couple years could shape the future of Oregon, and right now we've got our hands full.
Thank you, Jeff. Questions, Jeff? Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was intrigued by your comment about the nexus for the population of the industrial land not being as important as it is with commercial and residential property, and also juxtapose that with the fact that one of the big challenges with siting industrial land is it does need large parcels. And in the Willamette Valley, it's some of the best farmland in the world, and so there's a constant conflict between, you know, residential uses, commercial uses, industrial uses, and protection of farmland. So given what you said about the nexus, how far do you think this can go? I mean, could we look at a strategy where we could actually try to direct some of the new industrial projects to the hard-hit rural areas?
No.
Or how far does that go?
Sorry, Sarah, and I hate to interrupt, but we tried that. It doesn't work. They know where they need to go. They know what their needs are. And the idea that somehow when people come here, we assign them to the part of the state we think the need is greatest, that's not going to happen. I do understand the concern about farmland, and I think it's important that that obviously be considered. When I was at a meeting in at Lynn Benton Community College last year, and we were talking about this issue of land, and there someone there very honest and sincerely was bemoaning the fact that some of the best farmland in Oregon is being used for Intel. And I was trying to figure out what in the world could we have grown that would have produced the economic benefit and the tax revenues and the job and the career opportunities that Intel had. What we have here is a reasonable basis for trying to evaluate what are we losing and what are we gaining. And I think that I'm not asking that we ignore the needs of agriculture, but to some extent, and we were in a couple of years ago when I was on the governor's task force looking at industrial lands, and it was a public meeting, so I guess I can say it was the city manager for Woodburn. Of course, they've been in the not only the news but in the courts about their issues about trying to get industrial land. But he said at the time that they were very frustrated by what he regarded as the farmland uber alles interpretation of our land use system, that if it's farmland, we can't touch it. Because after all, the world still has an unmet need for grass seed, I guess, in many of our areas. So I don't know if it sounds too flippant about it, but at some point we've got to get down and make some choices, and that's what we have to do. The idea that we can say, gosh, they really need your jobs over in Burns, which I mean does, and I'm all for doing things, but that's going to be the companies that have a reason or need to be there. It's not going to be folks who want to be in the Willamette Valley, and we try to convince them because there are plenty of other states that will let them go where they want to go.
Okay, well then maybe I didn't understand, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I didn't understand what you meant then by saying that the nexus wasn't as important with the population.
What I was saying about that was this. If we know how many people are going to live there, we generally know how many houses they need. We also know how many grocery stores they're going to need, how many shopping stores, how all those things. There's a clear nexus. But you can have a small community that nonetheless will be drawing on population from a broader area, and where you'll have a large production facility with relatively few employees because there's not the nexus in what the size of the enterprise is and the population. A classic case of that is the town of Coburg, just north of Eugene, had fewer than 1,000 people, had almost, well, at its peak, had over 2,500 people work in the RV industry. And almost none of those 2,500 actually lived in Coburg. So it was serving as a regional system, and yet it wasn't part of our land use plan for Eugene Springfield. It was its own, and every once in a while someone would come down from the state saying, we have a terrible jobs housing imbalance. So we said, well, are we going to try to convince 5,000 more people to move here, or how are we going to restore? Are we going to shut down the RV industry? So my point is that these large industrial users really are serving a major statewide strategy for our growth, and that having that just simply be folded in to local land use plans is probably not serving the best interests of the communities or of the state.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Sorry, I misunderstood your question.
Now, League of Oregon Cities and Association of Counties can chip together. Let's see, so we have Janet Young and Tony Hyde and Ann Hennis. You guys all, I think there are three chairs there. Whoever wants to go first.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Very good. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I'm Janet Young. I am the Economic Development Director for the City of Gresham, and I'm here today talking about the City of Gresham, but really representing a lot of issues having to do with cities throughout the state. In Gresham, our economic development program really focuses on retention, expansion, and recruitment of traded sector industrial businesses. In addition to providing good jobs, the taxes paid by these companies are a significant factor in the city's ability to provide public services. We have a council-adopted traded sector job strategy that focuses on the sectors that we think make the most sense for our particular community, which are manufacturing, clean technologies, and professional services. I'm just going to summarize the testimony I gave to you in writing, but one of the points that I want to make is the fact that as a community, we're trying to do as much as we can to take care of ourselves. We understand the issues that the state has. We're not necessarily looking for, well, handouts would be nice, but we're not looking for a lot of handouts. We're doing a lot of things for ourselves, but there are some things that we need as well. We are seeing an uptick in requests that we get in for expansion and retention projects from existing companies, but as well for companies coming into the region. We have a number of great assets in the community. We've got some vacant buildings. We have some vacant land. It's not a lot, probably not enough, but some vacant land, including a 200-acre piece that's really one of the terrific parcels that is on top of the list for a lot of the clean technology companies that come through. Good piece that's well known by Business Oregon and site selectors and have that on top of their list. We have a number of other pieces of property, though, in a part of the city called Springwater. That's an industrial area that's within our urban growth boundary, but we are not yet able to find the magic answer as to how to afford to get infrastructure to that area. So we have land inside the UGB, but not served, not able to be developed yet. We've also been really active and aggressive in our small business sector in the community. In fact, we've had some comments in the press that there's probably no city in the state that's been more aggressive than Gresham at trying to assist small businesses. We have a garage to storefront program in our downtown that basically says if you're going to fill up a storefront less than 5,000 square feet that's currently empty, there will be no fees to you, no city permit fees, no city SDCs or anything. We've really been trying to get as many new businesses downtown as we can. We have an urban renewal grant program over the last few years that we've incented about $50 million of industrial development and added 400 jobs. But clearly, the most effective program that we have in Gresham over the last 5 years has been the Enterprise Zone. We've had that Enterprise Zone now just for 5 years, and the six awards that have been granted in that Enterprise Zone program will be creating over $200 million worth of new value and retaining or adding about 690 or so jobs. And these range from relatively small companies, a small bakery that's looking at increasing their productivity, all the way up to Boeing, who's doing a new plating facility and adding hundreds of new jobs. And these have all been existing companies in the community. And so it has been a key retention tool for us and an expansion tool. Several of these companies that have received awards have been national companies that have many choices of where they can make this investment at their other facilities, and having an Enterprise Zone in place has helped the investment come to our community instead. The tool is also really critical for recruitment of new companies. For instance, the recent announcement by Solexant, the thin film solar company, to come to Gresham was a real gating issue. They would not have even considered a site that didn't have an Enterprise Zone available. So what do we need from the state? First of all is extension of that Enterprise Zone program. We think it's really a critical tool. We believe that investment in infrastructure into industrial areas is of key importance, finding ways to help solve that issue. And other programs that you've heard discussed here today that help reduce barriers, the Strategic Reserve Program at the state, the payroll incentives, other things that allow us to work with our partners at the state to reduce barriers to entry for new companies coming in. So again, we really focus our programs on traded sector companies. We believe it's critical that we try to make the city as friendly as we can in terms of our programs and processes, and that comes at the benefit of new jobs in the community and additional tax benefits to the city. Thank you very much. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
So can you cite a company faster than 180 days in Gresham?
As a matter of fact, we probably could. Chair Beyer, I don't mean to be flippant about it, but I would say that the issue of permitting is one that we take very seriously in trying to streamline permitting. It is a... so long as the issues are within our own control, we probably could answer in the affirmative there. Sometimes the issues aren't in our control, so they may be wetland issues that are state and federal issues. There may be DEQ-related issues that are kind of larger than just a city processes itself. And I suspect that some of the industrial sites that they may have been referring to have brownfield issues and a number of kind of challenging things. Something that's, kind of your standard industrial project, already zoned, doesn't have those external forces at play, yes. We'll look at concurrency. We'll look at whatever we can do to try to get those building permit processes lined up with land use processes and get people in as fast as their schedule requires them to get in.
I'm reminded back in the days when I was doing your business of having a friend of mine who had a plant, steel rebar plant in Oregon, talked about doing an expansion site in Provo. Mm-hmm. And went into the office there and... city development office, and they met, and they said, well, you want to do this? And they said, yeah, like this. Well, if you like that one, we're willing to go. He says, why don't you go ahead and get your contractor, start working on it, and turn the permits in. It's a different perspective.
It's a different perspective. We can't go quite that far.
Bottom line was they got another couple hundred jobs.
Right.
Right. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tony Hyde. County Commissioner, Chair in Columbia County, and for the purposes of this meeting also, I have been sitting on the Business Oregon Commission for about 6 years representing local government. And I'm not going to read the testimony that you have in front of you. I'm sure you'll read it in your own time, but it starts with the principles from Association Oregon Counties, and I'm pretty confident that our principles are lined up with the special districts, the cities, the ports, and the state of Oregon, and hopefully with the federal government as well. I think that we are in a point where we have to be very strategic about economic development, and I wanted to talk for a moment about what we see are opportunities and barriers for economic development in the state of Oregon. First of all, I would reiterate what you've heard earlier today, that a lot of it is on perception. And as we know in the political world, perception is 90% of reality. And the state of Oregon does have a perception of being difficult to site businesses. And I would submit that perception also leads to difficulty in finding funders. And I've seen that happen over and over again. When you know that as a funder, when you know you have a project that can put a good performer together, you're more inclined to endorse that project quickly. And I've seen that happen over and over again when you have really good ideas that come to the table, and the difficulty is finding funders that will endorse those ideas, whether they be in San Francisco or Portland, in terms of the funders themselves. And ultimately I've seen those projects find funders and be very successful. But again, a lot of it is perception, and it's perception that we have in this state. And I think we're on the right track. And I would point to the governor's budget as an indicator of being on the right track. These are very difficult times for all of us, both in local government and state government, in terms of funding. And the fact that the governor put an emphasis on economic development in tough times, I think, is very, very important. And it's a clear indicator to the business industry that we mean business. So I endorse, I think, on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties, we endorse where the governor's budget is going. Clearly, we'd like it to go a little further, but there are things that we'll point out that I think make a lot of sense. One is keeping Tim at the helm of Business Oregon, I think, was a very good move. He's done a lot to bring that department into line and really focus on creating jobs and revenue for the state of Oregon. And we don't want to lose that momentum. So keeping the director at the helm, I think, is very, very important, and I endorse that. We want to talk a moment about working together as a team. And the fact that Greg Wolf has been on loan now to the governor for a period of a year to bring the ERT teams back and take another look and go back to the community development model, I think is a very good thing. Frankly, we've had, as you know, a lot of issues around permitting, and it's not just land use, although land use is an issue. I'm really excited to hear Senator Edwards talk about really focusing on what are the issues in terms of the barriers. I think that it's not just land use, but it's also administrative rules. And administrative rules are much easier to get over than straight land use OAR. OARs are easier than ORSs. I would also submit that working together as a team and using the capacity that we have is very important in these scant times. And we have 11 recognized federal districts, EVA districts, in the state of Oregon. And those districts are very comprehensive, and they're required by the federal government to have a comprehensive representation. And they're also required every year to have a community economic development strategy that recognizes the local clusters and emerging clusters and the strategies that will be used around those clusters. The fact that we're going to now form new districts and recognize the EVA districts as part of that capacity and reforming the ERT teams makes a lot of sense to me. I'm excited about it. I think that the ERT teams are one of the things that recognizes barriers in our permitting process immediately, and when you have all the permitting agencies at the table talking about it, you can move it very quickly. So that's one of the issues. Another one is, of course, we have the incentive programs that are important to all of us, and reauthorizing the Enterprise Zone program is key, along with a strategic reserve fund, $5 million in the governor's budget for that. And that is very, as it says, strategic. And finally, recognizing that there are different issues for different parts of the state. In Eastern Oregon, 5 jobs is about the same as 50 jobs in Portland area. And I would hope that we were able to change our strategy from one area to another and not have the one-size-fits-all with regard to our economic focus in the state of Oregon. I mean, quite frankly, if we're only going to talk about the importance of how many jobs are created with this project, we might as well just focus on the I-5 corridor and metropolitan area, and the rest of the state will be poverty with a view. Because that's frankly what will happen. So Eastern Oregon and the other part of the Southern Oregon are completely different. Coastal counties are completely different than the I-5 corridor, and their needs are different. So in closing, I just want to reiterate that the enterprise zones are, frankly, local government playing poker with their own chips. And we're just asking for you to extend that program and recognize that this enterprise zones require involvement of the state for them to work. We have all of the administration for the enterprise zones out of Business Oregon. So even though it's local dollars and it's local decision makers deciding who's going to get an enterprise zone project or not, it's the state of Oregon that ultimately comes back and helps us administer that program. And that's a great partnership, and we'd like to see that continue.
Commissioner Hyde, I have a question for you. I'm intrigued by the notion of that sort of the urban I-5 development versus the rural, only because I sort of fought that issue for about 25 years. Has AOC kind of done any work on, you know, what is it that we could do differently in some of the smaller rural communities? I think it's Senator Burdick's question early on the land use issue really gets to that. My experience was I can't tell you how many times I worked with clients or their siting officials that came in and said, you know, I want this and that. I want to be in a community of at least, you know, 50,000 and 10 minutes from I-5. And I'm trying to do a lot of work in some of the smaller communities who's didn't have a great amount of success trying to get them to look elsewhere.
Well, I think it's more than just trying to recruit on a statewide level to make a particular company fit into a particular area. I think it's more about, and I go back to the EDA districts, they know where their clusters are. They know where the potential emerging clusters are. And the state connecting to the local districts and having that conversation is much more strategic when it comes to, frankly, it's more than recruitment, it's expansion. Mm. It's retention and expansion and opportunities around research and development. They're out there. We have 52% of the state in public ownership, most of it in timberlands. We have some real opportunities around timberlands right now, whether it be cellulosic technology that's coming up or biomass production. And that doesn't even get into the carbon sequestration issue, which is really emerging right now. And we, as a state, we grow carbon-eating machines, and we don't grow them in the I-5 corridor.
Thank you. Any other questions? Ann?
Ann Hannes, Association of Oregon Counties. I think Commissioner Hyde did an excellent job outlining the issues and how we work together. What I would like to say and underscore is that AOSA believes that in order to be successful with economic development, we all need to view this as a partnership. In response to your question, Chair Beyer, Facebook location in Prineville was an excellent example of how it took the state, the county, the local governments, and businesses to attract Facebook there, taking advantage of the climate that Prineville offered, as well as energy availability and the enterprise zone that it located in.
I'm sure the cheapest energy price in the state didn't hurt.
Yes. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, next up we have Jason Brandt from the Chambers of Commerce, State Chamber of Commerce.
You'll have to put up with me this afternoon because our CEO of the Salem Area Chamber, Mike McLaren, is doing his civic duty serving on jury, so he's been out of the office most of the week. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jason Brandt, and I'm here representing the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce, which consists of 72 community-based chambers of commerce in Oregon, with a combined membership of nearly 30,000 business members. We appreciate the opportunity to address the committee today and provide input regarding job creation challenges and opportunities in Oregon. First of all, we would like to affirm the statements of the business organizations that have provided testimony to you, and we support the strategies within the Oregon Business Plan that address both the challenges and opportunities in the state of Oregon. The simple filter for any legislative action must be this: will the action further impede the ability for the private sector to create and or retain jobs, or will the action help facilitate job creation and retention? It really is as simple and straightforward as that, and no time should be wasted on anything that will cause further impediments. Job creation in the private sector is the pathway to greater opportunity for all. The general categories of concern are not new: taxation, regulation, land use, and organizational culture. Regarding taxation, Oregon's tax policy drives wealth out of the state. For example, there is an organization which operates an executive suites facility with two locations in the Portland area. Between the two facilities, there are 100 small offices and several conference rooms which are rented to small businesses. The goal is to incubate small businesses until they are large enough to move into their own traditional office space in the Portland area. The executive of that facility states, quote, "In reality, we are incubating small businesses until they realize that the tax structure in Oregon is oppressive, at which time they either go out of business or move to Washington State to take advantage of a more favorable business climate. Last fall, we lost four of our fledgling businesses and four more since the beginning of the year. Their stated reason for leaving is the negative business climate. It's disheartening, to say the least," end quote. Many other businesses have been negatively impacted by the recent passage of Measures 66 and 67, with business closures and some moving out of the state as a result. Oregon's tax policy has chased wealth from the state, and what is needed is tax policy that attracts wealth, to Senator Atkinson's point, which in turn helps create jobs, sustains charitable nonprofits, and supports many local community endeavors that enhance the quality of life for Oregonians. Regarding regulation, regulations are needed and expected. However, what is not needed is a continual piling on of regulations that ultimately do more harm than good by eliminating jobs for Oregon citizens, increasing the cost of doing business, and growing government regulatory agencies at unsustainable rates. Some state agencies have the reputation of going after business, issuing citations, and levying fines for non-safety issues that often could be resolved by a more cooperative working relationship with employers to achieve what should be a common desire: success for the business and safety for workers and protection of our environment. However, perception exists that there is little concern for whether a business succeeds or not. Reasonable tax policies and common sense regulations are a given and supported by business. Furthermore, we believe many are indeed willing to live with and abide by a higher standard in Oregon to protect what we all enjoy about Oregon. However, what is needed is support for those businesses and organizations who do all that is required, go through every process, pay every permit, jump through every hoop demanded by local and state government, are provided approval for their project, and then are forced into costly delays and legal fees to defend themselves from appeals that have no standing. If Oregon is going to have stringent processes and checks and balances in place when it comes to land use issues, then those proceedings need to be respected and upheld without forcing organizations into costly delays and expense. This is another barrier to job creation and investment in this state. Here is one example. Pacific University wanted to expand in Hillsboro and needed a variance, so the city council approved after the customary thorough public process. The decision was appealed to LUBA. LUBA upheld the city council decision. The case was then appealed to the Court of Appeals and subsequently the State Supreme Court. The delays ended up costing Pacific about $3 million, whereas the neighborhood group that filed the multiple appeals only incurred $1,000 or so in cost. In addition, the local government expended tens of thousands of tax dollars to represent the city council decision. This has to change. Many will not even chance going through the process to invest in this state. While that might be the goal of some activists, it is a disservice to the majority of Oregonians and does not help put citizens of the state back to work. The state of Oregon's organizational culture is the critical issue. This can either be a hindrance or and discouragement to business or an opportunity. Currently, it is seen more as a discouragement. There is not the sense that the state of Oregon really embraces the private sector as a partner in building a vibrant future for the state. While there is a shift of focus to the need for jobs and the talk is more favorable in acknowledging employers as important in helping turn Oregon around, the actions will speak far louder than the words. The encouragement and support for healthy businesses will need to exist from the top down in all agencies of the state and in those organizations fueled with state funds. Policy and criteria that is created in organizations like Clean Energy Works that pushes a small independent business person closer to extinction because they are not a union shop will ultimately kill jobs in this state. The state should examine very closely the criteria being used for government contracts to ensure that the small businesses of the state that are so critical to the life and well-being of hundreds of Oregon communities are not being discriminated against because they are non-union operations. Again, the organizational culture that emanates from the state of Oregon will make a huge difference one way or another. The entrepreneurial spirit is alive and well and will be Oregon's greatest strength and opportunity if allowed to flourish. Reconnecting the state code to the federal tax code will also generate opportunity and spur capital investment, which means new jobs. This will also help those entrepreneurial startups with a higher allowance for startup costs. Again, many of the opportunities, such as the bioscience industry, are outlined in the Oregon Business Plan. To make that plan a reality, we need to address the barriers noted and, most importantly, create an atmosphere in the state that embraces the citizens and local communities who are the private sector employers who can lead Oregon back to prosperity by creating jobs if given a reasonable chance to do so. Thank you so much for your time and consideration, and we look forward to working with you to make great things happen for Oregon.
Thank you, Jason. Any questions? Thank you very much. Next up, reports. Show and tell.
Cool, show and tell. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Annette Price. I'm State Affairs Manager for the Port of Portland, but I also serve as the President of the Oregon Public Ports Association. And in the interest of time, I'm going to defer to my colleagues, and I'll back clean up at the end. So I'd like to introduce Gary Neal, who is the General Manager of the Port of Morrow, and this is Michelle Bradley, who is the General Manager for the Port of Tillamook Bay. Gary?
Thanks, Ann. Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Atkinson, members of the committee, my name is Gary Neal. I'm the general manager of the Port of Morrow, located in eastern Oregon. So thank you for the opportunity to make some comments here today. We're going to talk a little bit about barriers and what we can do to create jobs, I guess is kind of the theme of what we're supposed to do here today. You know, we live in an incentive-driven environment and structuring projects, and in particular in rural areas, that's just the nature of our efforts of what we do to create jobs. And we find ourselves, always have found ourselves, to try to generate that effort to even be competitive or to have a chance to attract a business. Today, investment is being made very cautiously throughout our economy. Factors that come into play are more than ever focus on the balance to create long-term certainty for the industry, and if they choose to invest and create jobs. That includes regulations in that certainty, the environmental and land use, the taxes, the capable, qualified workforce, and in the educational component of our state. We have to maintain a competitive environment to allow our industries to compete in the world economy, and that's a key issue for us. We need to continue to invest in infrastructure, such as Connect Oregon programs, and to continue to move other projects for infrastructure, similar to Columbia River Crossing is another example of next steps that need to take place for investment in that infrastructure. Family wage job creation is of utmost importance. Oregon Trails is the national average in personal income and exceeds the national average in unemployment. That's something I guess you, I'm sure, is not new to you. We need to identify air and marine, rail, and freight projects that will improve movement of goods within the state and through our ports. Again, the Connect Oregon and other infrastructure investments that assist in moving goods and services to the world market. We need to provide leadership on key environmental and regulatory issues. For example, The lower Willamette River Superfund site issue needs to be addressed in the Portland area. Need to provide leadership on environmental issues and agency activities to ensure economic consequences of regulatory actions based beyond mandated requirements are taken into account. You know, an example of a concern that I have is last Friday morning I sat in on a hearing here in this building related to the new water quality standard rules that DEQ is considering implementing. And those are the kind of things that will continue to haunt the state of Oregon in job creation and economic development for years to come. And it's going to continue to drive business and industry out of the state. You need to establish requirements for state agencies to act within specific time requirements on pending enforcement actions and development of new regulations. You need an energy policy taken into account the economics associated with that energy requirements. You need to review Oregon tax policies and develop a reform agenda, corporate, individual, and incentives. Encouraging investment in the research and development and manufacturing as well. Capital gains needs to be looked at in regards to how to defer that for investment, maybe back into capital investment in Oregon. There's the jobs tax for assistance in or tax benefit for creating jobs for existing businesses, I think, is a key component. I know that when we look at incentives for job creation, we typically look at how to attract a new business into the state. At the end of the day, when you know, historically, when we talk about economic development, you know, I don't know, 80% comes from within. Or a lot of our business and industry feel like they're looked at on the sidelines and not what about us is kind of the attitude of, you know, we're creating incentives for new business to come into the state, but what about the ones that are here and to maintain and expand and grow? So I think that governor's budget for the economic development programs that are put forward for Business Oregon are very, very positive, you know, better than what was anticipated. Usually there's never enough to go forward in economic development efforts. One of the things when I came here 22 years ago into the state of Oregon was you had this program called the lottery program, and it was, and I thought, wow, that's pretty neat. I came from the state of Washington in economic development efforts and I managed a port there. And I thought, wow, they got a lottery program, and it was developed for economic development. Look at all the opportunities we can do with that. Well, you know, unfortunately, over the years that, you know, those funds have been carved out to support most things except for what I would call true economic development. And so anything you can do to help capture opportunities for resources to go into infrastructure development and job creation is really critical for the long-term benefit of this state. I guess with that, you know, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we'll let the whole panel finish, and then we'll see if there's any questions.
Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Atkinson, my name is Michelle Bradley, and I'm the General Manager with the Port of Tillamook Bay, also a member of the Oregon Public Ports Association. I'd like to echo what Gary had stated regarding just getting these things together. Permitting has been an issue. We've heard that over and over and over today. One of the issues specifically with my port, just to give you a nutshell background, if you don't mind if I go to our visual aid.
Did not take that, huh?
Okay. This is the Port of Tillamook right here. And so we actually have 1,600 acres of zoned industrial land that is out there and ready. We've worked with OBDD. We have three state certified sites out there. It's just a matter of getting people there. The sites have been certified, but how do we get the people there? And I know for us it's a matter of marketing. It's we don't have the resources to go out nationally to try to bring folks here, so it's working with the state on that effect. But even then, all the little pink dots here represent basically the lemonade that we're trying to make out of the loss of our railroad in 2007, the storm that took down our Port of Tillamook Bay Railroad. And so my Board of Commissioners has come up with projects that will in lieu of repairing the railroad at a reduced rate, we're working with FEMA federal dollars to do $44 million for the projects out here at the port. Needless to say, here we are, February of 2011, and the storm happened in December of 2007. So, it's, I know everybody has their processes, but it's uphill. It's working with FEMA. It's working with the State Historical Preservation Office. Apparently, we are one of the most intact naval air station left over from World War II, so that creates yet another historical significance for trying to get projects on the ground. So with that, you see we have multiple projects out here. Airport improvement, we have a manure digester that turns cow manure into energy, green energy right there at the Port of Tillamook. So there's a lot of opportunities out there as well. Yeah. We're also working on a feasibility study, just since I see your reaction there, to deal with the cow mortalities in Tillamook County, because about 10 cows die a day, and right now they're getting transported to Coffin Butte and just tossed in the landfill. What can we do with those to help the local farming community deal with those? So there's a lot of opportunities, but how do we get it all to work? So the ERT team, I know, is very valuable to us. Sounds like that's just being reconfigured. Very happy to see that happen. So,
thank you. AP.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Annette Price, State Affairs Manager for the Port of Portland. I will not repeat what we are supportive of, what a number of our colleagues today have said. The key areas that we see as opportunities is doing things like building a Columbia River crossing, continuing the Connect Oregon program, and building the transportation infrastructure near the businesses that generate the traffic and generate the jobs, quite frankly. And I know, Mr. Chair, that you will be participating in an event tomorrow with the governor on industrial lands. We have been very active in that process for many years, but most recently with you. I was talking last night to my industrial land manager who stated something to me that's very obvious. We have wetlands issues in the state of Oregon, and in case we haven't noticed, it's wet in the valley and it's wet in the metro area. And it takes us 2 years to get a wetlands permit process. We think that we can do that better. We don't know what the answers are, but we're more than willing to be a part of the solution going forward, because it's costly. It prevents businesses from locating in Oregon in a timely fashion. We think we can do better, being respectful of the environmental requirements, but we've got to figure it out. The other piece that we see with the state and its advantages, we work very closely with our friends over at Business Oregon, not just in Oregon, but globally. The Port of Portland and Business Oregon, we have to take the long view. We have to take the global view. And that view is it costs money. But what we try to do is, in our marketing efforts, along with the Department of Agriculture, we try to pool our resources so Oregon can get more bang for its buck, whether it's helping Oregon businesses participate in trade shows across the world, or making sure that there's that extra piece of material that needs to get to a meeting that we're having in Shanghai. Those types of things are vitally important, as are the most flexible dollars we have in state government, which are the Strategic Reserve Fund. We were very pleased to see the governor's budget. We would love to see, as colleague Mr. Roberts said earlier, love to see more in the Strategic Reserve Fund. We won't turn dirt, though, here in Oregon, and we're ready from across the ports in the state of Oregon to do just that. We're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
Senator. Thank you. A couple questions. How long is your airstrip?
The main runway is a little over 5,000 feet, so we're the second longest airport on the Oregon coast.
Do you have big airplane capacity?
We can accommodate a Class 2B with that, but we don't have the capacity per FAA to expand it any further because of the outlying mountains.
Do you have hangars?
Yes. Yeah, we have 35 hangars, and a portion of our FEMA projects also are putting in additional hangars.
Is there an FBO there?
Yes, there is, and that's one of our main projects. Our priority projects is to do ours. We're currently 576 square feet. We're going to 3,100.
You've got big airplane hangars?
We're going to be doing some larger executive hangars that can do that, that are 75 feet wide.
Is that where the blimp hangars are?
Yes, it is.
Those are big hangars.
No, there's a picture in at the blimp hangar of a P-51 flying through it. That's just... Mm-hmm. I wish I had that picture. It's cool. Anyway.
There's a copy of it in our lobby. I can get you a
copy. There's two... let me be an airplane nerd for a minute. There used to be a senator here that AP worked for, Senator Durfler, and in World War II, he flew a PBY-7, which was this amphibious airplane that either loved him or hate him. I loved him, and he had a steering wheel, not really a yoke, and he flew this thing on radio commands all over, and the only one in Oregon is in the blimp hangar. Mm-hmm. But... So there's your historical moment for the day.
Thank you, Senator.
Is that part of your county's major hub? Is that airport?
Yes, it is. We are the main area for most of the transportation.
Are you an economic trade free zone or whatever it's called?
I don't believe we are out there. Just out of the city limits.
The reason I rattle off all those questions is that if you look at what happened, and correct me if I'm wrong, but 15 years ago with the economic free trade zone movement, they all were around airports, or as my 8-year-old calls them, hairports. And the hairports had all the land. And the hairports were the place where I know in Southern Oregon, Medford did real well. I know Klamath County, which I think has the longest airstrip on the base, actually did well with it. I think Eugene, under your tutelage, is that right?
Had one.
Springfield had one. And I'm just curious, because to me, when I look at that as a giant asset on the coast, I'm an airplane guy, and I didn't know your airstrip was that huge. That's a big airplane. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
I appreciate that, Vice Chair. It is. It's very, and my board of commissioners has seen it as an untapped jewel that they're really trying to look forward to bringing and expanding and growing out there. And that's one of the avenues that we're looking at.
Anything else? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming today and enlightening the committee. And, Richard, is there anything else? With that, we are adjourned. It's cool.